The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
That sweet sound is our next guest, Ron Block. Ron Block is a banjoist, a guitarist, a vocalist, a songwriter. Alison Krauss and Union Station has been with that band since 1991, and Ron has received 14 Grammy Awards for his work with Alison Krauss, Vince Gill, the Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack, and also received a Dove Award for his song A Living Prayer. Ron Block has also written on spiritual musical topics for the Rabbit Room website since its inception in 2007, and here today to talk to us about a brand new release, his book called Abiding Dependence, Living Moment by Moment in the Love of God. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure, Ron.
What a career.
Holy smokes.
Ron.
You settled down, Ron.
I'm like seriously blown away reading your bio, and just I've enjoyed so much of your music over the years without knowing it was you.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I don't know it's me.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's true. Talk about the collaboration. You know, as I was reading your book, Abiding Dependence, I was thinking about how, you know, it's clearly written by someone who knows something about consistency in, you know, practicing as you do your instrument, and dependence as being part of a band. So talk about what that's been like for you.
You mean consistency in practicing or
yeah.
Yeah, well, in practicing, it's the everydayness of picking up the instrument every day that makes me play better. Hmm. So when I go a few days, and it happens occasionally, I'll have to fly home from, you know, the UK or whatever, and then I get home, and there's a couple days where I don't play. But when I pick it up again, it's not quite as pleasant.
Interesting. Now,
because
go ahead.
I can still play, but it doesn't feel great. Like, I love when I play the instrument for it to, I pick it up and then it feels great. It feels good and it sounds good. And so for me, it's the consistency in practicing. And of course, abiding is a similar thing. Mm-hmm. If we wait and wait and wait and wait to get with God until we have problems, then it's a heck of a lot harder to dig our way out of the hole we've let ourselves fall into.
Oh, that's good. That's a great analogy.
Right.
Ron, yeah. You mentioned that in your book, I don't remember where it is in your book, where you said that you don't like the word devotional because you feel like it implies some sort of obligation or some part of your schedule, you know, a box you have to check. And I wondered, so you liken it, I think, to like falling back in God's easy chair type of thing. Is that the way you also look at practicing, or is working on your instrument a joy, or is it something that you have to check off?
Well, what I said in the book is it's the phrase devotional time. It's like, I'm doing my devotional time. It's like, I'm doing my practice time rather than I get to go play banjo and guitar for a living.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like, so there are many times where, you know, in the morning I go, this again, you know, I don't feel like practicing my banjo, but I go down there and I, because I know when I get into it, 10 minutes into it, I'm going to be going, wow, Earl Scruggs is so good. I'm going to practice and, you know, I'm going to be totally into it. Yeah. So sometimes you do have to push past that initial thing. And it's the same with, you know, spending any time with God. Lots of times we go, well, I don't have time. I got all this stuff to do. Everything's in my mind. And the best thing we can do is shove all that stuff aside for even for 15 minutes.
That's fabulous. Ron, yeah. I always love people's origin stories, you know, how things started. And, you know, you're fascinating. Your dad owned a music store in Southern California. That piece of music we played coming in was called Hogan's House. Talk to us about those early days. I mean, growing up in a music store, you were sort of surrounded by all sorts of different sounds.
Yeah, it was a lot of rock and roll, blues, jazz, you know, everything but bluegrass. for whatever reason, when I was, you know, 12 years old, I heard bluegrass for the first time. I mean, I saw it on TV, and all of a sudden I just said, Dad, I need a banjo. Dad, can you get me a banjo?
Wow.
You know, and I'd already been playing guitar for couple of years, you know, just strumming chords, but I didn't really have any direction. Once I found bluegrass, I went nuts for the banjo. In fact, Dad said, I got you a banjo when you were 13 and you didn't come out of your room till you were 21. But through my teen years, then I suddenly had focus and direction. Mm-hmm. and banjo and guitar became sort of parallel tracks all the way through. So I've played banjo and guitar both from the beginning, and I look at them as having sort of different functions for me, but they're equally interesting.
And did you find Alison Krauss in Union Station, or did they find you? How did that happen?
Well, when you play bluegrass, it's a jamming culture. And, I mean, especially when I was growing up, it's like, you know, I was a kid, teenager, going to festivals. And, you know, I would see people like Allison and, you know, she wasn't like a big, huge bluegrass star at that time. Mm-hmm. She was an up-and-comer, and we all were. All in our young bands, we were all kind of the up-and-coming generation. And we, you know, I'd see Allison or I'd see, you know, Barry Bales or one of the other guys, and I'd go, hey, your band was killer. Do you guys just come later? And so we'd get together in somebody's hotel room and we'd play for 3 hours. And so that it's that fomenting sort of culture of jamming and hanging out and just being friendly and supportive of each other that created that. And so eventually when the time came for them to get a banjo player, banjo/guitar player, and all the other stuff that I did as well, it made me an asset. And so they picked me to join.
Fabulous. So at what point then, Ron, does jamming become worship? Does it? Do you see a delineation? Does that sort of happen organically? I mean, you're surrounded by people who love Jesus and also love music. The two, you know, separate tracks going along the same way until they become one.
I think we make separations lots of times between sacred and secular. And I think, you know, it's the what's the Chariots of Fire where he says, I feel God's pleasure when I run.
Yeah.
And I feel that. I've felt that my whole life when I play music. When I've practiced and I'm really working like to get my playing to where it feels great and it sounds really good. That it's when I get to that space and I play, I feel that pleasure. I feel that sense of God's pleasure. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. So in a jam situation, if it's a great sounding jam, I'm just busy having fun and taking joy in it. And I don't make a separation necessarily of what's worship and what isn't. But I do think God, just like, you know, with our kids, you know, if my son is 24 now, but you know, when he was 7, if he was thrilled with something and having lots of joy, that gave me joy.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, and I think God is much more than a human father. So when God sees us taking joy in the life that he gave us to live and the things that he calls us to do, and we get this intense sense of pleasure and satisfaction, I think he takes joy in it. And I think sometimes we put our own sort of like joy killer attitude on things where, oh, you know, I shouldn't be doing this because it's pride or whatever. You know, we kind of like, we kill the joy in things sometimes by trying to be too religious
with
it.
That's really good.
Ron Block is with us. His new book is called Abiding Dependence, Living Moment by Moment in the Love of God. Ron's been a banjoist, a vocalist, songwriter for Alison Krauss and Union Station since the early 1990s, winner of 14 Grammy Awards. Is it a silly question to ask what projects you love the best so far?
Which which Allison projects or overall?
Overall.
Yeah, your life.
Well, I, of course, like, you know, I helped create that music we've made with Allison. I mean, well, I was there not at the very beginning of Allison's career, but I came in right at the time where it was starting to take off. And, you know, we together, all of us created that music. So I am proud of that music and I love that music. And, but when you play in a band that long, pretty soon, if you're not careful, you can begin playing a role in the band.
Sure.
And so for me, that music is forever home and it's my comfort zone and it's challenging in its own way, but to go out and make new music and then bring all that confidence back into the band, that's what now gives me joy. You know, now I can get together with a band with new music that I've made. Not that I play that way in the band. I do this music with an Irish tenor banjo player, and we make these duo banjo albums together, full band, but there's two banjos going, and one Irish banjo is played with a flat pick, and bluegrass banjo is played with finger picks, so I finger pick it. And it's just this completely kind of new music that's been incredibly challenging technically, and I've had to learn a lot more about technique and how to play properly on certain kinds of things. So to make that music and then go back and play with Allison in the band, it brings a whole new level of sort of confidence and joy into that music. So it all kind of feeds together, I guess.
Hey, Ron, let's talk for a second. Abiding Dependence is your brand new work. 40 meditations, living moment by moment in the love of God. What is it? I mean, I'm sure on the road you've got some time to sort of sit and muse about things. Meditations, this has to be a first for you to sort of delve into a sort of a longer format and give praise and worship and hopefully direction as people read Abiding Dependence.
Yeah, it is my first foray into a longer form, and it was, you know, it was tough at first, just to write an entire book. I've written posts and things like that on the Rabbit Room for years, but never had to put something together. So I started with the life of Jesus and how he had to operate. And the thing is, he was 100% God, but he was also 100% human. And we often emphasize his deity and not his humanness. So he set aside his omnipotence, omniscience, and his omnipresence to become a man. And he had to operate only by hearing what the Father told him. He had to live just like we're supposed to live. So that's where I start, because he's the prototype. He's not just an example, but he is an example.
Yeah.
He's not only an example, he's also our life, the life that lives inside of us. But he lived totally as a human being, and he had to live by hearing the word of the Spirit and see what the Spirit wanted to do and then doing what the Spirit wanted it to do. So, yeah, it starts there, and then it moves out into forays into our identity in Christ. So,
Ron, as I was reading the book, I see that there are quotes from George MacDonald, C.S. Lewis. So I'm assuming that those are some heroes for you in the Christian faith.
Yeah, I've read Lewis. I mean, I was 8 years old when I read Narnia. So, and I've been reading it on and off ever since, those books. And then through my teens, I worked through his science fiction and Screwtape and, you know, Mere Christianity. And then in my 20s, I kind of finished most everything except like studies in medieval and Renaissance literature.
You know, I mean, it's a niche thing there. No, I get that.
Yeah, that's a niche thing. And then, of course, Tolkien and George MacDonald became huge to me because I started reading him because Lewis quoted him so much.
Sure.
And I've still not gone through, of course, I have the Johannesson, George MacDonald, you know, 46 works and 44 volumes. And I still haven't gone through them all, but I've read a lot of them, and several of them I've read over and over. They're just full of life and light. So
if those are heroes in the Christian faith, talk about musical heroes. Who do you look up to? Who do you love to listen to now?
Well, of course, like as a banjo player, for me, Earl Scruggs is prototypical. You know, like he's the prototype of what bluegrass banjo is. And then J.D. Crowe is another. He was sort of the next generation from Earl. And I could go on and on. There's so many great banjo players that I love to listen to. A modern one is a guy named Jens Kruger. He's a really great, beautiful, composes these beautiful melodies. And then I listened to everything. I mean, just so many different kinds of music. I've sort of majored in American roots music and early jazz. I love Christopher Parkening and Andrew Segovia and I just listen really wide. Lately I've been really getting into Irish and Scottish and Celtic music.
Really?
Much more deeply than I have. Yeah. Cause I'm playing with, playing with Damien O'Kane for about 10 years. So probably about 10 years before that, I was kind of starting to listen to more Celtic music. But just through him, it's becoming such a fascination for me.
Ron, you're an amazing writer. I mean, you've written some really terrific songs. And, of course, those songs get picked up by, you know, big-time stars. What's that like for you when you sit down? Obviously, you're not writing for someone, or maybe you are. But then, you know, through all these permutations, someone picks up that song and you hear your recording, your words, your thoughts, your emotions coming out of someone's mouth or someone's instrument.
It's beautiful. I mean, especially Allison has done quite a few of my, you know, the gospel songs that I've written. Now, Living Prayer, and There's a Reason, In the Palm of Your Hand, Jesus Help Me to Stand. She did quite a few. And it's always a joy to hear that because, you know, it's sort of like the song optimized. Mm-hmm. You have this amazing singer because, you know, I'm not an Allison style singer. So it's really wonderful to hear somebody that sings at that level, be able to put the words across in a way that people really, really respond to the song. It's just beautiful.
Okay. Our time's almost up, but I have to ask you about Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Because it's gotta be one of my favorite soundtracks of all time.
Clearly one of my favorite movies
of all time. I mean, I'm a man of constant sorrow. So talk about that project, how, you know, what your role was in that, it's been how many years, 20 years since it's been out.
Oh yeah. 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So looking,
and then when you see the film,
looking back on it and looking at it now, how do you see it?
It was a phenomenon. And, I remember T-Bone Burnett calling all of us, you know, bunch of musicians from Nashville, you know, people I'd played with at festivals. And I think we all knew each other and calling us. And we sort of like recorded, just sort of the demo stuff, at a little studio in Nashville and just hanging out and hearing all the music. And eventually it turned into, you know, real recording. And then the movie, and then we did the Down from the Mountain tour and the sort of the Great High Mountain tour. So we did two big tours based on all that music from Oh Brother and Cold Mountain. So the fallout from that in my life was just absolutely incredible because I got so much to hang out with lots of other amazing musicians on the road, you know, on those tours. And just, you know, I played on two of the songs on the record. I played on Man of Constant Sorrow. And then I think it was In the Jailhouse Now was the other one.
Mm-hmm. Is George Clooney your friend?
What's that? I did meet him, and he was super nice.
Fabulous.
Really
that's
fun.
What we want to hear.
Yeah, that's good.
Seriously,
yeah,
when you watch the movie, do you laugh? I mean, it's one of the great, it's one of my top five favorite movies ever.
It's hilarious. No, there's so much good stuff, so many great lines in that movie. And then the other thing that's weird is to, like, it was really weird at first was to see George Clooney singing and it's Dan's voice. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And of course, you know, Dan told me, used to tell the story. He said he explained it to his wife. He said, yeah, so I'm going to be singing the part. But when you're on screen, my voice is going to be coming out of George Clooney's mouth. And she goes, Dan, that's my dream.
Fabulous. That's excellent.
Oh, that was great. Well, listen, Ron, it's been terrific to meet you. I enjoyed the book so
it's excellent.
Much.
Doing
I really
a great job.
Recommend
Thanks
it.
So much.
to someone that just wants to take a step back, just as you say, breathe in,
meditate,
breathe out, yeah. Like just take 4 seconds to breathe, and then maybe you, yeah. maybe you can catch something important if you take the time.
Very good. Ron, we're fans. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Don, Kathy. I appreciate you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
That's Ron Block. Check out the new book. It's really wonderful. Abiding Dependence, Living Moment by Moment in the Love of God.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.
Place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.